Hello, I am Cody Ellingham, and this is The Transformation of Value, a place for asking questions about freedom, money, and creativity. I was having dinner with a prominent Bitcoiner recently. He said to me, "Cody, we are winning the store of value argument, but we are struggling when it comes to medium of exchange." We had been talking about mass adoption of Bitcoin, about the different layers of Bitcoin, and the different technologies that exist. Following this, we finished our dinner and proceeded to pay the bill in cash, Japanese yen. The irony struck me. What does this mean? We have the most powerful people in the world uttering the words Bitcoin. We have all-time high prices and large financial institutions getting involved. Yet here we are, a bunch of Bitcoiners in an international city paying in cash. Are we still early? Or is there something else going on? Today I propose that we take a step back and ask some deeper questions about how Bitcoin and money encounter each other in the world and where things might go from here. I think it's important that we don't jump to looking for a clear and easy answer, but instead to sit with the questions, to contemplate them, to let them prompt us as to the different possibilities and second-order effects of Bitcoin. So, is Bitcoin about mass adoption, or is it about parallel resistance? The modern financial system is totalitizing. That is, there are very few inhabited places on Earth where money cannot buy things. In most of those places, the monetary regime is set by the state. There can be some grey zones, though. Many years ago, I was in the Pacific island of Tonga, and there you could pay for a taxi with New Zealand dollars, Australian dollars, or in the local currency. There was a degree of parallel currencies in operation, but that mostly reflected a lack of financial infrastructure. I mean, I was just paying cash after all. But that's not that much difference to my experience the other night, paying for my dinner in cash. It's very interesting. My experience, though, in developed nations is that for the most part, people are not so worried about debasement and manipulation of money. It's just not at the front of mind. The ability to access banks, have a bank account, have credit facilities, to get loans, to get an overdraft, the convenience of all of that stuff is an order of magnitude more important for people in their day-to-day lives. Most people, again, in the developed world are not crying out for something new to replace their local currencies. Instead, they want more of it, fiat accumulation. It's worth pointing out that the scale of the current financial infrastructure that is out there in the world is mammoth. Those layers and layers of systems and relationships and businesses and software, established banks and corporations and everything from gift cards to government treasuries to export receipts and payment terminals, it is all built in service to a fiat money worldview. It's not just about consumer payments, it's the entire financial plumbing of bonds, currency issuance, international trade, foreign exchange. It's all bound up in law, taxation, spreadsheets, contracts, and so much more. Importantly, this financial infrastructure is intimately connected with the real economy of factories and things. The real economy and the financial economy both reflect each other in a sense. So our question prompts us to think, what does it mean to encounter such a totalitizing system with a radical new technology like Bitcoin? Does a case for Bitcoin mass adoption or hyper-Bitcoinization, where everything, everywhere is denominated in Bitcoin, require us to assume the failure of modern nation states and their dispensation? Does it require a collapse of fiat money, not just in purchasing power, but in its very infrastructure? What even is mass adoption? Are there precedents for this kind of thing? In this show, I have talked before about hypothetical ideas of imminent political change and radical reform, but what if we look at it from another angle? What if this doesn't happen? What if Bitcoin instead continues to exist and to grow in value, while at the same time, fiat alchemy also continues? Can they both grow in parallel? There is enough slack, I think, in most developed economies. That means Bitcoin is still optional. People have the necessities and there is rule of law. And because it's not a life and death situation, you don't get punished for not paying attention. Even with significant price increases or unaffordable houses or other hardships, there is still some sense that things mostly work, right? I think of the financial order a little bit like the way legal systems have developed. Over hundreds of years, the idea of law has accumulated people's time, knowledge, and expertise to become what it is today. Perhaps it's even thousands of years. It is not just about what law is at the very moment in time right now, but the entire history of jurisprudence, legal history, and precedents that have been built up over time. It's an ongoing project with innovation, sometimes backsliding, sometimes crises, but in total, the thing continues to exist and we are governed by it. With enough effort, though, we can push for changes to it. Even in the past, when there has been major financial crises, the system in total has either been bailed out or currencies have just rolled over into new forms. But the governing structure has almost always remained. They design a new banknote, they nationalize or privatize the banks, or adjust the rules and other criteria. People's savings may be wiped out, and of course there will be inflation, but the authority of the thing we call the state legitimizes this and makes it so. As they say, we are all in this together. Even when it comes to the myth of collapse, what does that really mean? Have we really sat with this idea and thought about it? Is it possible for collapse to take place and for Bitcoin to remain valuable? Is collapse even an option? It seems to me that in even the most difficult situations of war, disaster, or famine, people either leave or they deal with it. They pick themselves up, brush off the dust, and try to rebuild what they can. This is necessarily a political project. It's about people, institutions, communities. The fundamental logic, at least up until now, is that the state, money, and people exist in a social relationship to each other. One or the other can be pushed and pulled, but fundamentally they all orbit around each other. So what about separating money and state? What does this involve? For a Bitcoin mass adoption project to take place, does it require engaging this social relationship? Does it require recruiting the cooperation and leadership of the state? Or do models of hyper-Bitcoinization rely on the destruction of the role of the state in our lives? Are there other ways to understand this? What would the cooperation of the state even look like? Large financial institutions becoming involved, having to show your ID to send a Bitcoin transaction, having to know your customer, launching national strategic Bitcoin reserves? Is it the case for that kind of mass adoption of Bitcoin where I could have paid for my dinner at that restaurant the other night in Bitcoin, that Bitcoin actually has to become something almost unfamiliar to us, something surveilled and controlled, where the idea of self-custody, for example, or being your own bank is simply not an option that's acceptable? Or are we thinking in outdated terms when we talk about the people or mass adoption? When we talk about the emancipation of what Bitcoin could mean for all of the people out there, are we relying on the idea of the mass that is ultimately an outdated concept? The mass is a 19th and 20th century thing that emerged with the development of the mass media. Getting a nation of people to do something is only possible when you have a mass to propagandize. Indeed, the idea of a nation is only possible by forming a mass in the first place. As Jacques Ellul wrote, to be effective, propaganda must constantly short-circuit all thought and decision. There can't be any critical thought going on here. So what if instead of a social relationship with the state and people, Bitcoin, true to its cypherpunk and engineering roots, is a kind of parallel resistance, something that exists outside of that relationship, that outside of that dynamic between state and people? What if we think of Bitcoin as existing both within the borders of the nation state, but also within the second realm of the internet and the virtual world? For me, at least, Bitcoin is anything but mass. It is highly self-sovereign, individual, hyper-local, hyper-global. It's well-read and freedom-focused. But freedom is like one of these words that it's quite difficult to explain. It's not really able to be put into a slogan in a way that really speaks to what we think of as freedom. It's a nuanced idea. When it comes to fear, on the other hand, or other things that are often picked up by the state, these are much easier concepts to propagandize or talk about. Freedom is a nuanced and intellectual idea that, for a lot of people, is not something that they really encounter. It's not something that can be declared the way the state can issue an order overnight or to tell you to do this or to do that. It is fundamentally an optional thing. It is opt-in. Bitcoin is exit. And so do we need to step away from our ideas of the people? This kind of idea of a democratic social project where everyone is involved and that there is an opportunity for everyone, and instead be a little bit more coolly critical of this and see that for a lot of people, they simply don't want it. Maybe Bitcoin, looking at it from another lens, is something for those who want it, and simply those who don't want can continue doing what they're doing. The people who don't want it perhaps have reasons that we might struggle to understand even today. I guarantee there are people you know, certainly people I know, who I couldn't even give them Bitcoin. They just don't want it. It's a worldview they're not willing or ready to accept. We might think in our pride that it's just a matter of time before fiat currencies collapse, and that those unbelievers are not going to make it, that they will have fun staying poor. But again, have we really considered what is meant by those words? Have we looked in the mirror when we ask that kind of a question? What happens if they don't choose to use Bitcoin? A financial collapse without the physical collapse of the real economy simply means the state will step in, change the rules of fiat, and roll over into a new currency. In the much more unlikely scenario that there is some natural or man-made disaster that wipes out the real economy, it is fanciful for us to think that people are going to be able to use computers and digital money in that kind of situation. Is it much more likely that over the long term, most people are just not going to choose Bitcoin because, well, we never quite hit the critical pain thresholds that make them change their actions? Is there enough juice in the system that even if things get worse, the marginal citizen is still not motivated to look for real alternatives? I wonder if we ever get to coming close to this kind of pain thresholds, that in fact the state emerges with some form of new fiat alchemy. What if the state recognizes that there is unease and adjusts itself to the changing reality? Perhaps they may even include some kind of underwriting or backing of their fiat money with something like Bitcoin to at least give the illusion of stability. But as mentioned earlier, perhaps this comes in a way that is neutered or limited compared to what we know as the freedom orientation of Bitcoin. Perhaps in that kind of situation, the state will develop some new mantra where people are asked to forfeit some of their savings or reduce their quality of life or opt into some new draconian system. But it is for the greater good, of course. You know, we live in a society after all. I'm thinking of CBDCs here. I mean, an instant bonus if you scan your eyeballs and sign up now. It would be pretty appealing to a lot of people, I think. Ultimately, we must recognize that it is in the best interests of the state to let its citizens, at least nominally, have something. Despite how it may feel sometimes, there is a lot of ruin in a nation. That is to say, no matter how bad things seem, we still have a level of infrastructure and capital goods today that has never been before seen. So what if, on the other hand, though, we look at Bitcoin as parallel resistance money? Perhaps we don't need to commit our minds just yet to hypothesizing some grand post-political, post-nation-state world. We don't need manifestos or political action to push back against the state from a place of a social relationship. Instead, we can just use Bitcoin where we can, as we are currently doing. According to its fundamental properties that we all know, value will continue to accumulate in hard money. The number will go up. If someone is willing to take our fiat, are we not happy to get rid of it? In parallel resistance, we can choose to spend self-sovereign money with people who actually want it. We can continue to have the freedom to criticize the existing financial system and think outside of its bounds, while also making use of it where we can. In a sense, as fiat loses value to Bitcoin, that system is working for people who have Bitcoin. Is there some equilibrium point, perhaps? Just like landlords and tenants, where some people have Bitcoin and some people don't. How does a parallel system interface with a total system? At what point does it get out of balance and there really is some massive disruption to the social relationship? Or can it continue indefinitely in a way that is extractive for one party, that is the people who have fiat, and incredibly bountiful and productive for those who have the asset, the money that we call Bitcoin? What examples can we dive into history where this kind of thing has happened? What was the political frictions and challenges that came up along the way? What key things needed to happen on these examples that we can perhaps learn from? Is reform possible? Or does the legacy financial system indeed need to be completely dismantled? But doing away with it, what do we lose along the way? Is it not the case that when one power structure is removed, it simply creates a vacuum for another to fill? Are we really willing to entertain the offhand comment that financial collapse is inevitable, when in all likelihood such a thing would in fact be the worst possible outcome for everyone, including Bitcoiners? I don't know. What is the reform path? What is the resistance path? What is the revolution path? I hope we can go deeper to ponder these questions. It is not just a code base. It is not just static. Bitcoin is alive. It is fundamentally about social relations, I think. Bitcoin is a project that is based on people using it, talking about it, and building upon it. I would really like to hear what you think, though. If you've got any books or article recommendations, I love reading and thinking about this kind of thing. I really enjoy thinking about it, looking at it from different angles, and understanding the big question. What is the transformation of value? Thank you for listening. I am Cody Allingham. If you have any questions or thoughts at all, send me an email at hello@thetransformationofvalue.com and I will get back to you.